So welcome to Spotlight on Arts. This is John Costa and I'm here with Rob Watson for this week's recording. How are you, Rob?
I'm very well, thank you.
Cool. We always talk about the weather, don't we?
We do.
I only do it because at one point you're going to say, John, stop talking about the weather.
Because we don't bring biscuits anymore and we don't talk about the biscuits. That always used to be the...
Have we lost the biscuit catalyst from our time of recording all those podcasts every Tuesday for God knows how long?
Biscuits, yeah. and it'd be a conversation about what type of biscuits we
need. We need to replace the biscuits. There we go. We'll have to have a good think about that. So this week on Spotlight on Arts, our special guest is someone I've seen around quite a lot, wandering around the cultural quarter, you know. Always doing something, and then started following online, and we've had a few conversations, and I thought, you know what, actually, we need to get you in speaking to us very soon, and it's Sim Mystery. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. So before I ask you what it is that you do and maybe where you work and all those sort of things that you do, I want to ask, I always ask the creatives this year, what's your first memory of something creative? Where you were like, oh, this is cool. I really enjoy this, you know. Young person, school,
very, very young person, yeah. Very young person. It would have been during the summer holidays. Mum and Dad used to work a lot. So we had to entertain ourselves over those summer holidays. And I remember doing some creative writing and then created some images to go with it. And I was just in the zone and it just made me feel so happy. That summer just seemed to evaporate, just how quickly it went because I was so absorbed in what I was doing. And I really enjoyed that creative process of just filling the page with images or words and then sharing it with others, which is quite cute too.
Now that might be a number of years ago. You don't have to tell me how long, okay? So let's focus on the fact, is that a zone that you can return to now? When you're doing your own thing, is it a zone that you try and get other people in when you're doing something with them? And is it something that you try and encourage people just to find themselves?
Absolutely. It's something that I can tap into as a creative, but all the community workshops that I've been doing, I try and create that safe space so that people that do come along feel like they can take that risk. And it is a vulnerability that you're exposing that person to or encouraging them to face and fully be creative and in that moment to take a risk or try out an idea and create something that maybe only existed in their imagination. So it's a wonderful, almost like a firework moment when people kind of come along and make something that they didn't think that they could do.
It's a gift when you get a moment like that, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely adore it.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, the only social media that I go in, which I kind of is not work related, that I enjoy looking at is Pinterest. I think only because, it's starting to sell me stuff now more, but I think it's slightly changing. But and of course, every now and again, you'll get something which is just like, oh, you know, remember what it was. Be brave enough to be courageous, like when you were a child and you weren't scared of anything and all that sort of stuff. Do you find that no matter what age someone is when they come along to one of your workshops or anything that you're running, that they're just, no matter how old you are, they're waiting for permission to go back to being that child when they were like not scared of anything, like when it came to like their creativity?
Very much so. It's some community members are a little bit less reluctant than others, but once you kind of give them permission, like you say, and encourage them to go on that journey with that young person that they've brought along to the workshop, and they see that you're rolling up your sleeves and getting involved, and actually there's no wrong answer, it almost just frees up this younger self to kind of go and be messy and be creative and have fun. Like give yourself permission to have fun and have joy. It's something that I think when we get bogged down with being a grown-up, it kind of becomes a bit of a distant memory.
Yeah. And do you think it's just, is it something since lockdown where, I look back at lockdown now, from my perspective, it was like we were given permission to go back to having hobbies. It was okay. You could put your phone down and do something else. You didn't have to be posting about your hobby. You could just do it and keep it private.
Very much so. I think that was a big shift in society, especially with Leicester residents. Having been in lockdown the longest, we were able to connect with what it is we wanted our life to be like, look like, feel like, smell like. And those hobbies became something that we didn't want to get rid of once we then had to adjust to normal life.
So, Sim, coming from Leicester, you know, I'm not from Leicester. You know, you're not from Leicester. You may have grown up here. Rob's not from Leicester. He's from Liverpool. I'm from London and stuff. And I think there's that as a creative, people are just like, oh, do you do this for your own community? Do you do this for your own tribe and stuff like that? How do you, as someone who is a, I would view as a creative, I do creative things, but I see you as a creative. Is it challenging to try and get away from the stereotype of maybe because who you are, where you're from, what your nationality is, maybe what your religion is, where your parents are from, or how long you've been in the city, are you a new arrival, whatever, that suddenly it's like, oh, there's funding for that. You know, how do you stay true to who you are as a creative without playing the game of the funders?
That's a really tricky question. And I just want to say I am a Leicester girl. So born and bred Leicester girl. It took me 18 years to come back, but it was to serve the community as to why I came back. And I think to stay true to you as a creative is to find what it is that you want to share with the world. Find what it is that you want to make people see or smell or whatever it is that you're being creative. And as long as you're doing it from an authentic place, if the funding is there, the funding is there. And you've then got a body of work to support that funding application. If you haven't, then you've fulfilled your passion and your jug's completely brimming. So people feed off that. You know, when you're doing it from an authentic place, other people know when you're genuine. Especially when you're working with youngers, I find young people, you know, they can smell a rat. They can
smell a fake.
Smell a fake. So when you can make that genuine connection with that young person and they want to come along with that journey, it kind of just that's the proof in the pudding, as it were. I think it's a difficult one. You don't want to change your practice to try and fulfil the needs of those funders, but those pots are few and far between, and they're only ever short, small pots for one-off bits of funding. So you don't ever see, well, me as a creative, I don't ever see the opportunity to have like a 3 or 5 year project, because you're only given funding for a year or 2 years, which once you start build that momentum, you've then got to evaluate it and hope that you get some more. So stay true to yourself, keep creating, and there's always beans to eat if you are feeling the kind of the pinch, as it were.
So if you were given a pot of funding now, this magical pot of funding with a magic wand appeared, how would you go about allocating it that was maybe what you felt was needed from your perspective as a creative in the field every day doing it, as opposed to what you have to go? I mean, it's forms, it's filling things out, it's the latest trendy thing that a funder wants to do. We're not going to mention any funders' names, obviously, but more about, I've always felt as someone doing community media with Rob, for example, you know, or radio, you're always going after, you can never fund the project that you want to do or that you know is needed, because you're trying to fit someone else's funding pot at that particular moment. And maybe just when you think you've got that body of evidence, suddenly the focus changes. What is it that you would do that would be different?
I would make more developmental funds available for the artist. There are some available, but they're just, you know, they don't last as long as you need them to last, and it makes it very difficult to kind of know how to spend your time. It'd just be nice to have funding behind you so that you could explore like fully where a project's going to go, as opposed to having the time pressures or having the limitations. So just having that cushion for artists to be able to go and fully explore would be a change that I would make. Unifying the approach of applying for funding would be another way of kind of making it easier for creatives who maybe aren't as confident filling out those applications. I know I'm neurodiverse, and sitting filling out one form and then changing your language for another form is excruciating, and it leaves me with very little brain power to then focus on the thing that I want to be doing, which is the creative arts side of things. So that's what I would do. Unify the whole process and give some funding to creatives to really get in touch with their creative practice and be able to share that with others from an authentic point of view.
So Sim, let's talk about some of the roles that you play. I know you've got your own CIC and you do stuff at the Phoenix as well, and I'm sure many, many other people. So just give us a snapshot. What's a day in the life of Sim Mystery look like, or a week or a month? Or
am I
asking you to go down a rabbit hole?
So I wear many hats. Like I said, I am neurodiverse, and something in my later years that I've been able to shift is acknowledge and praise the fact that I'm not someone that can do a 9-to-5 where every day is the same.
So, or wear one hat.
It gets a bit dull. So I've been a design technology teacher for 15 years at both mainstream and special needs education. And it was through that made me look at the gaps in community and made me want to set up something that would allow community members to access things like, you know, woodworking tools and you know, small-scale battery-operated tools. So Colour Arts was formed to try and fill that gap. You know, if I can't deliver some of the things I was wanting to deliver in a school environment, let's bring it to the community. So that's been hugely successful. So Colour Arts is almost like my brainchild, as it were. I work at the Phoenix part-time as their community outreach officer. So my job there is to try and diversify audiences and make maybe those harder-to-reach communities for organisations like the Phoenix, make them more aware of what's on their doorstep and what's available.
And is that the Phoenix as a venue as opposed to a cinema?
A venue. I mean, we're trying to incorporate the cinema programme as well, but trying to include more experiences so you get not just a cinema experience. You've got the food there. We'll get a DJ to kind of make the night so it's a real night to come out to. So I've always said, you know, if you're going to come out, let's come out properly and get to the Phoenix, where it's a one stop. You can do lots of fun things as well as just catch a film. So it's been a real exciting journey with them, and I feel as though we're progressing in the right direction, where the global majority residents are reflected by the people that are coming through the doors. So I'm really enjoying that role.
Yeah, it's an ongoing battle though, isn't it? I mean, for many organisations it's an ongoing battle, but the Phoenix as well, it's always battling that sort of the history, what's going on at the moment, you know, its location, all those sorts 100%. Of things you're constantly fighting. So you mentioned about being a design technology teacher. Did I get right? Design
that's
technology?
Right, that's
yeah,
right.
DT, I remember that. That's my age group. Mate. I'm 58. I remember doing design and technology, O-level. Did quite well, actually. What did you learn about being a teacher? From your perspective, what did you take over from those 15 years about young people and teaching and stuff?
It was that penny drop moment that I absolutely adored. Supporting young people through their creative journey, trying to get them to decide on what they were going to make, and that success on their faces was just a picture when they got it, when it worked, when they got the grade that they wanted, or they just understood a process. I found it really difficult to home in on a specialism, so I was actually able to deliver everything from CAD to metalwork to woodwork to food. So it really did give me
many hats
again, but the opportunity to support that young person who maybe found English hard or maths a bit of a challenge, and give them a practical situation where they could apply that and justify what they're doing, and give them the maths to be able to kind of go, right, okay, you've got a millimeter tolerance, so you know, how are you going to work that? And they kind of see these very very boring like syllabus that's on a page actually come to life. So that to me was quite an exciting period that actually I quite like that.
And it might be a slightly odd question here, but not necessarily the colleagues that you were working in any particular school, but maybe conversations you've had with teachers or anything that you've done elsewhere. Do you feel that teachers of specific subjects miss out because they don't do things that require two or three hats as a way of engaging with a young person? Because, you know, when you're talking to one specific subject, you're engaging with them with that. With you, you're talking about their, you know, doing a bit of maths with them while they're doing design technology. Actually, that seems to me, I mean, from my schooling, I think I got more out of education because of doing design and technology, because it actually got me interested in lots of other things.
I mean, I kind of agree a little bit. I think teachers that are, you know, have got one specific focus limit themselves because they only ever get to see that young person in that environment. However, you know, one would argue that actually having a teacher that's specialising in one subject, you're getting all of that breadth and knowledge from that one person. So it swings and roundabouts. So I think from being able to see that person as a whole person, not just a walking, talking textbook, it's nice to have other elements that they could bring to share with young people in the education system.
I never thought any guest on the podcast would say swings and roundabouts to me. That's my one. Stop saying that. You reverse the charges on me completely. So you're listening to Spotlight on Arts with John Costa and Rob Watson, and our special guest this week is Sim Mystery, who's taken us on a bit of a magical mystery tour with all her hats, that's for sure. So let's touch on something like, I was looking at your profile on LinkedIn, and there's this Jubilee celebration thing you did at Bradgate Park called I Remember. So just give us an overview of what was that. And it's still there, you told me.
It is still there. So yes, that was to celebrate the Queen's Jubilee. It was a bit of a partnership project with Buzzing Roots. They commissioned a couple of different artists to do some creative poetry and some artwork on some slices of oak that was saved from Bradgate Park itself. So the tree was a beautiful project, actually. They were wanting an installation and they didn't know what it was, what they were wanting. So I had a good conversation with the park rangers and had a little tour of the park. I say little, it was quite a big tour, but they signposted a few of the really old, well, very old trees that have been in the park since sort of King Henry VIII's time. And that just made me feel like really insignificant in the grand scheme of things. But I went away and took some photographs of these beautiful trees and created like a metal triptych panelling of the tree in like a line form with the words of the poem that had been written by community in there too. It was a beautiful piece just to kind of celebrate the place, create something that would hopefully last longer than me when it comes to just having art on the wall that I would never have thought place like Bradgate Park would have my artwork, but I feel really honoured that they've kept it, not just for the Jubilee, but forevermore, and they've named all the people that were involved with the project as well. So
it's interesting, that comes back to, we were talking to another guest this week, Juliet Marting, on the Spotlight on Heritage, and she was saying about a festival she ran back in 2015, and if you were 10 then, you're in your early 20s now. Yeah. So Queen's Jubilee 2012, is that right? Is that the one?
No, it was 2022.
Oh, the most recent
the
one.
The most recent one, yes.
Three years ago now. That, you know, at some point those young people or the people from the community involved in it are going to realise and, you know, or get older, take other people they know and go, oh, actually it's still there. So it's that kind of, they're part of the heritage of the park now, building on what's there. Yeah. Okay. So tell me about drum and bass.
So drum and brass is... Drum and brass is another CIC that I've been involved with for a couple of years now. I am their community engagement officer, and my role there is basically to try and get more people into playing music. We've got some amazing facilitators that we then signpost music lessons to. We've tried to make it as affordable as possible. We've got a little orchestra called the No Bars Orchestra. They were involved in a procession earlier today in the city centre, so really buzzing, actually. I just love the whole concept of bringing people together, regardless of your gender, your background, you know, your anything, like things like art and music.
The creativity is the catalyst.
It is, very much so. It sees no barriers. It sees no, you know, reason not to engage. So I really like that about drum and brass and the projects that we've been doing. It just brings people from all walks of life together. So
would you be the same person if you did a 9-to-5 doing what you do, or do you think that you benefit from the many hats that you have because then it allows you to be actually who you are?
I do not think I can work as a 9-to-5. I've tried that and it was absolutely excruciating.
Well, 9-to-3 in a school, I guess, as well. That must have been quite challenging.
I mean, 7:30.
Doing starts. Down the teachers and listening. Yeah. Yeah.
I much prefer having many, many hats on, because it means once I get bored of something, I can go have a little look at something else and come back to the other project. And that really works with just how my brain functions. And I think something that, you know, women especially have real sort of barriers to is getting diagnosis for things like neurodiversity. So I've had to learn quite late on that some of these traits are part of who I am and how do I make the most of them as opposed to they be a detriment to how I work. So having lots of hats, having lots of different things that I can do just keeps that energy going and just keeps me like as though I've got the momentum to kind of do other things.
Do you find other creatives come to you and say, like they look at what you do and, you know, how do you do that? And you explain it. I mean, you're very open about your neurodiversity there. So you talk about that and people go like, oh, maybe I'm like that and I need to go away and explore. I mean, it's almost like you're giving people permission to be who they are 100%. Rather than don't do as I do as I say or I'm
yeah,
showing,
just,
you know,
so. I mean, I'll signpost and I mean, I've got a daughter who's 16 in a week and she got a late diagnosis of autism at 10 and it was through that process that made me look at myself and made me realise that actually being female, trying to get a diagnosis is very different and difficult than being male because the signifiers are very different in a classroom setting. So it was through that journey that allowed me to then signpost other people to kind of go read this book or have a conversation with this organisation or skip the NHS queue and go private or whatever it is that I've tried to do.
It's going to work for that particular person.
Completely. And I think it's not one size fits all. It's just actually you have got options. And how do you know if you aren't able to find the labels that resonate with you? I've never been a label person, but in the last sort of decade, I'm like, actually, there are certain things that make sense. And ADHD and autism are two that I'm like, ah, hello, these are my friends.
Finally,
I make sense to myself.
So, Sim, a couple of weeks ago, we had the Last Friday event that was here at the LCB Depot for February, and it was also the opening night of Format 25 here, and I was there supporting one of our guests came on a couple of weeks ago, Vinci, our international Chinese student, with one of her photographs, and of course you have some content down there as well. So tell us a little about what it is, what it's about, and how proud are you on a scale of 1 to 10 that you're still able to create content that actually gets submitted and taken into a festival.
Well, I'm flattered and honoured to have my work selected. It's it takes me back. I've spent a long time with imposter syndrome, you know, my work's not good enough and no one's going to like it, I don't submit or I make a late submission and wonder why it didn't get selected.
You can talk yourself out of it, can't you?
You can. And I think I turned 40 not so long ago and that was a big shift for me to kind of go, what am I doing? Like, I enjoy taking these photographs. So I enjoy the work that I do. Like, I need to be brave, like, and put myself out there. And I have been for the last sort of 18 months. And it's been a wonderful experience having your work actually looked at. And the two pieces that are downstairs were some darkroom techniques that I explored with Lester Lo-Fi about a year and a half ago. We looked at darkroom techniques and we were playing around with lasers and little prisms and just sort of exploring what can happen in the darkness and appreciating those little slithers of light that take over the page. And it was a pretty dark time in my life. I was sort of trying to navigate through PTSD and depression. So the pictures reflect that disrupted harmony of I just wanted to be in my bed that day. I didn't want to get out, but actually coming out and exploring and being creative and allowing myself to be in a zone where I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know the end result, but I wanted to sort of see. I wanted to explore and learn something new.
And I can see looking at you that is something that you're really remembering.
Yeah.
That experience. And so you were doing something that was beneficial, you were helping yourself, you weren't doing it to create portfolio, it just happened to be something you created that then you could put into a portfolio in the broadest sense. And then this event came along and you're like, well, actually that fits that. Making new content.
No.
I can go back and do that. And sometimes the best work is submitted to something because it finally makes sense.
It does, and it did. And I mean, I was looking at the criteria, I was like, actually I've got three wonderful pieces, of which two were chosen. I think they were definitely the stronger pieces, which capture that state of mind when you're not feeling 100%, when you are in the depths of depression and PTSD, which I know a lot of people can relate to because it's something that has impacted quite a lot of people that I've come into contact with in the last sort of year and a half, which, again, having something to talk about and share opens up so much more than just that superficial conversation, which I really enjoyed, especially having the exhibition and people reading what the work's about and having those conversations thereafter has been really magnificent.
Yeah, the meaning behind it. Yeah. I guess also just touching on briefly as well is that kind of content on demand. You know, people are like, I need to be creative today, I need to create this, or I've not done one of these, I need that for my portfolio. Whereas what you're saying is just be creative, mm-hmm. and in whichever way makes you happy and whatever you feel at that moment. And even if there's not a reason for creating that or going and doing that course, you know, like you said at Leicester Lo-Fi, do an amazing job and offer so many opportunities for people to kind of engage in so many different things to do with darkroom photography and techniques, that suddenly what you'd created that helped you at that moment suddenly had this purpose that you could submit it to something. So you've got a second bite at that cherry almost.
Well, very much so. Very much so. Again, coming from a place of authenticity, like just explore, see where it takes you. I think sometimes when you take the pressure off where something needs to go or producing something because of that deadline, it takes away just the essence of what you're trying to create. So having space to be able to explore it in a way that is meaningful, yeah, there might be an opportunity to submit something later, or someone else might like it later on in the line. But I think it's a relationship between you and your art form, whether it be the canvas or the, you know, photographic paper. It's that connection and what that means to you at that moment that can really shine out and talk to people.
So Sim, here we go. Last segment now. Let's get us over the finish line. So let's talk briefly about your 16-year-old daughter. Does she have the creativity gene, or is she like, oh, mum, I don't want to do anything like that. I like doing this.
She is incredibly musical. Literally any instrument. She's got pitch perfect voice. She can play the cello, the cornet. She paints a little bit, but I think she's gone down a creative avenue that I know very little about. Although I did join a band, which she wasn't very happy about recently. But hey, you know, it's one of those. She's creative in her own way. She wants to do photography. She wants to do art when she gets to college. So I don't push. I just allow her to sort of explore and see where she goes.
So she's keen to try other things. It's just she's really into that. Now, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to end on that, because I saw it the other day on social media. You are in a band.
I am.
That is just crazy. I'm not obviously jealous. I mean, I'd probably be in a boy band, though, called Grey Zone or something. But, you know, so do tell us a little bit about your band then.
So our band is called Visceral Vessels. We are a 6 pro female strong group. We make post-punk music, lots of noise, lots of very, very real sort of sounds. We've got 3 tracks. We performed them all at the Fireberg on Saturday. It was a phenomenal experience. It's part of the Unglamorous movement, which was set up by a local musician a couple of years ago. And I tell you what, I've never been in a space where women are supporting women. We're just had no experience of playing any instruments. We're just literally within 66 days we're ready to be on the stage, and it was such a wonderful experience. We're actually wanting to carry on. We've been told we've got to record an EP because the tracks are that good. So I guess this is just another
hat.
Avenue
it's
for,
another hat.
It is, you know, it's a lot of these poems that I'd written when I was, you know, an angry teenager that have now again just come up with a new lease of life, putting, you know, vocals to it, putting, you know, a beat to it, and before you know it you've got something that you could tap your foot along to, and it's not just a poem that's sat in my cupboard, you know, gathering dust and no one can see it. So I think this is definitely a shift in my creative process where I'm putting stuff out there and I'm being brave to take a chance on myself.
I like that parallel between that and you being a teacher, and I'm kind of keep coming back to that, because it's like you kind of stand at the front using that kind of terminology, and you're saying to young people, be brave, be creative, you know, have a go, try this, have you thought of that, you know, don't worry about that barrier, you know, smash through that, kind of all that advice that you would give to a young person it almost seems to me that in your creative side, you're giving that to yourself.
Very much so.
Yeah, get up on stage, use that poem, blah, blah,
come
blah.
Come on, yeah,
and completely. I guess you don't really realise that you're, you know, kind of a role model in that perspective, that other people will probably look at you and go, oh, if she has a go at doing that, I'd do that. And you're very striking red hair, which obviously fits perfectly with a punk band, I guess.
100%.
But also you just want to do and be who you are authentically, which you've mentioned a few times. And I think other people resonate with that.
I hope so. I mean, I wouldn't want to be anybody else. And if what I do inspires others to be creative or take that leap of faith in themselves, then fantastic. I think we need more courageous, brave creatives to take the stand and do something different, because what else is there in this life?
Absolutely. You get one chance, I guess, don't you? So, final question. Your latest hat is the punk band. What's the next hat that you're yet to put on that you think, I've got my eye on that? What's that next hat? Because we never talk about what comes next. We always say to people about what you're doing and what you've done. We never say, you know, what do you want to do? You know? Well, is there a gap that you see in your portfolio?
Well, there is a gap, and I have been fortunate to be able to fund a bit of time to work on my creative process. So I will be spending some time looking at sculpture. That's my vision, is to sort of use colour arts as a bit of a vehicle for community co-created sculpture. And I look at it this way. I'm a child of you know, migrant workforce. I've got no wealth, no, you know, heritage of like, you know, passed down wealth in that way. I'm completely in the most landlocked place in the city, in the country.
Middle Earth.
But then I'm landless as well, you know, I've got nothing to call my own. So, and I think of all the other people that are based in the city that are of a similar thinking.
That can resonate with that idea.
Very much so. And that whole idea of, like, when you mentioned about the I Remember project, you know, you've got this almost like pilgrim of going back to your artwork and sharing it with others. And if I could create more of that in Leicester, I'm taking the Yorkshire Sculpture Park as my inspiration. If we could have something like that in Leicester, where we've got more artefacts that's created by landless people, you've got a sense of belonging, you've got a sense of pride. You know, it's the I was here on the bus, you know, moment where you're scribed at the back of the seat. Like, there's something about having your writing on the wall. And I'd love to be able to spend some time just developing my own creative practice to be able to make that a bit of a reality.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you.